Shalom, everyone. Shalom. Shalom. Shabbat Shalom. Chag Sameach. All right. I kind of running around like a chicken without my head. We got in here late, but we had a good reason. My daughter had a baby. So we're at a disadvantage for a few minutes, but I'm going to go ahead and start because, first off, I didn't bring my computer here from the campsite up here because I thought we were going to be bringing a flash drive, plug it into a computer with a projector. So I borrowed Rico's computer, and they're going there scrambling to get me a projector. So I'm going to start, give you all this text and everything, then we'll show you pictures. So, what's that?
Projector's on its way.
But
you need that chair, maybe. If you can just move one over. So we can project into the wall without your face?
Okay. Now, first off, from the title, I think it's something along the lines in search of the Ark of the Covenant. I've got to tell you, I'm not Indiana Jones. Okay?
The Ark of the Covenant?
The Ark of the Covenant. But we are going to talk about the search for the Ark of the Covenant, but that's not really the topic. Okay? That's not really the topic. That was just kind of to get your attention, maybe. So, what I want you to do is I want you to go to the book of Yehezkel, Ezekiel. And we're going to go to the 44th chapter. And I'm going to read this from two different texts. In the 44th chapter,
Avast virus database has been updated.
New folder number?
Let's see. Let me
search for it. Still up.
Okay. In the 44th chapter, let me give you the verse that I want. Verse 23. They're going to read this out of two translations. One is going to be a Stone Tanakh. The other is going to be a New King James. And they'll be very similar. But it's talking about the Kohanim. The Kohanim or the priest. Everybody knows that, right? The Kohanim or the priest. And we're told that they have a primary job. Primary job. In chapter 44, verse 23, it says, "They shall instruct my people concerning the difference between holy and ordinary." Between holy and ordinary. "And they shall inform them of the difference between contaminated and clean." That's the Stone Tanakh. Let me read this to you out of the New King James. In the New King James, it says, "They shall teach my people the difference between the holy and the unholy, and cause them to discern between the unclean and the clean." So let's talk real quick about Yeshua. Was Yeshua ever unclean? Yes. Yes, of course he was. Because if you come into contact with a corpse, you're unclean. Okay? It doesn't mean that you have sin, but you're unclean. You have an impurity. Alright? So, was in the carbonate, the sacrifices, did Yeshua ever offer a sin offering? Yes, but you notice they weren't enthusiastic in saying yes, okay? Because you were afraid if you said yes, I was going to say no, but if you said no, I was going to say yes, okay? The answer is yes, he did. But you see, here's a problem. Here's a basic problem that we have is that we don't understand these concepts. Now, a sin offering, in our minds, we were taught as we grew up, well, that meant that you had committed a sin. But that's not the truth. It can mean that. For numbers of sins, you are required to bring a sin offering. But, let's take a very common case. A married woman has a baby. She has to bring a sin offering. She just fulfilled a commandment of God. So where was the sin? Well, it comes back basically to the original sin, because the nephesh, or the soul, is in the blood. And when you have shedding of blood, there's a loss of nephesh, there's a loss of life. Well, that's because of sin. So you have to bring the sin offering. So the Messiah brought sin offerings at different points in his life as prescribed in the normal life of any Jew. If he didn't, he's not Messiah. But here's the problem, is we don't understand concepts that were taught by the Holy Temple. Now, the temple is comparable to what we call Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden. But how does he teach us about Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden? I told you that my daughter had a baby. And so we went over to see the baby, and she has a 3-year-old and she has a 2-year-old, and I sat down with them, I was talking with them, but to talk with them to communicate, you have to take it down to levels that they can understand. They can't understand me at all, okay? Because I'm at a much higher level. So that's our relationship with God. So he gives the temple in order to communicate to us Gan Eden. So what is the holiest place on the earth? Everybody should know this. The Holy of Holies, right? The Kodesh HaKodeshim. And that is equivalent to Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden. That is to paradise. So how do you approach it? How does he teach you? He teaches you by levels. By levels. You didn't find it? We're missing the presentation. So this might be a real challenge.
What pictures are you looking for?
Do a PowerPoint search. Okay. Start PPT.
What?
Start PPT.
Who would be in charge of that? I'll go see.
What's that?
Who would be in charge of that for you?
Oh, well, I've got to get the file. If you can tell my wife to bring my computer, I'll just use it. Okay. All right. So, this is going to, I'm figuring how to do this. Now, we have concepts that we haven't been taught. And this is what the Holy Temple is about. So, let's talk about a little bit about the temple. First off, you need to understand this. The temple is a place where ceremonies are conducted. And a conduct is expected. Now, the ceremonies and the conduct are designed to teach you how to approach God. But you have to always remember, these are ceremonies. In other words, a Yom Kippur, the ceremony of the high priest going into the Holy of Holies, does not actually bring the atonement. The atonement comes from the people repenting before God. But it teaches this concept, like me talking to my 3-year-old and my 2-year-old, so that you can understand. So that you don't miss the messages along the way. So, let's talk about to divide between the holy and the common. And sometimes it's written the holy and the profane, the holy and the common, the holy and the ordinary. Here we are. We're in Sukkot, right? So Sukkot, we had on the 15th of Tishri, was a Yom Tov. What does a Yom Tov mean? It means good day, literally in Hebrew, but it means it's a high Sabbath.
You have seven of these during the year. So the 15th of Tishri, the first day of Sukkot, is a Yom Tov. And then on Shmini Atzeret, that's a Yom Tov, right? What do you call the days in between? Chol HaMoed. Chol HaMoed. Now I want to spell this word chol for you. Chol is C-H-O-L in English. Chol. Everybody say that. Chol. I want you to say another word. Hell. Not hell like go to, but hell with a at the first, okay? Hell comes from chol. Alright, now, so we are in Chol HaMoed. We need something else.
No,
what? My computer, the file wasn't on there. Okay.
Are you sure? Can you just do it with my computer?
No. Okay, we'll get it set up. All right, now, so we are in Chol HaMoed, the intermediate days of the festival. So there are the common days, the profane days. How many of you know what Havdalah is? Havdalah is where you end the Sabbath, right? Now, the Sabbath, what do you start Sabbath off with? What is the ceremony of starting the Sabbath? It's Kiddush. Kiddush. The Sabbath literally, technically begins. You do the candle lighting before Shabbat begins because you can't light a fire once it's begun. But the Sabbath formally begins when you hold the cup up, and that is the Kiddush. Okay? And so what Kiddush means, it comes from the word Kodesh, which means holy, which means to set apart. Now God set apart this day by you picking up the cup, then you are entering into what He set apart. You are setting yourself apart. So, in Havdalah, just as you have a door in Kiddush, Havdalah is the door out. So what does Havdalah mean? To separate, exactly. Separate. Okay, now separate, you have a prayer that's called Hamadvil prayer. And in Hamadvil, I'm not trying to confuse you all with the Hebrew, but there is a test at the end. Okay? In Hamadvil, you pick up the cup and you say, Brukatai Hashem, I'm just going to go forward. Hamadvil, Bain, Kodesh, Bain Chol Kodesh. Okay? Hamadvil Bain Kodesh Lachol. Okay? Hamadvil Bain Kodesh Lachol. That means to separate between the holy and the common. To separate between the holy and the profane. So you do this in every week. Now, what was the beginning of this? Who started this? Where did this begin? I mean, everybody's going to say God, but how far we're talking about separating between holy and common? Number one job of the priest. Teach the people this concept. Teach the people this concept. So where do we first find this concept coming forth? In Genesis 1. In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void. Darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God hovered over the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And the evening and the morning were the first day. Okay? So, and God separated the light from the darkness. So, immediately you have this concept of dividing between these two. There is a stone, and the stone was found at the southwestern corner of the Temple Mount. It was found in the excavations following 1967, when Israel captured or liberated all of Jerusalem. And the stone had been damaged in the 1870s by Captain Charles Warren from the Palestine Exploration Fund, who drilled a shaft to study the base of the temple, and he cut through part of the stone. Now basically what the stone says is, to the house of the trumpeting, to the house of the trumpeting, and then part of it's missing. Part of the inscription in Hebrew is missing. But now they have finally determined what they think it says. It says to separate between the holy and the common. And Josephus records for us that the priest, every Shabbat, or before the Shabbat, would go out and they would blow the silver trumpets. And this would signify the coming of the Shabbat. And what it's telling the people is to prepare yourself to move from this. Okay, so, you notice so far we haven't talked about the Ark of the Covenant, right? Okay, I told you. So, in Yehezkel chapter 44, in Yehezkel chapter 44, Ezekiel 44, we're going to read about the Kohanim, and let's go to verse 18. Linen turbans shall be on their heads, and and linen breeches shall be on their loins. They shall not gird themselves where one perspires, when they go out to the outer port of the courtyard. Now this is what I'm hoping to show you some pictures, because we have hardly any concept in our mind of the Holy Temple. And let me tell you a Mishnah first. Actually, I'm going to tell you four Mishnahs, so I'm doing it verbatim. There might be a word or two that I missed. This is found in the Tractate Kelim. Kelim is part of the order called Taharut, which deals with impurities. And so it says in Kelim 1:6 that there are 10 sanctities in the world. Now what this means is that there are 10 levels of sanctity.
Can you turn off the light for a minute? I got a picture of the store. You need that?
Okay, yeah, this will help. This is a very, this is from the Temple Institute, by the way, but it's a very inaccurate picture. But we'll just keep that up there. Let me just talk for a moment, and we can kind of, we'll work with it as we go. But the 10 levels of sanctity, or 10 levels of sanctification, it says that the land of Israel is more sanctified than all the other lands in the world. And then it gives two reasons. It says, because the barley for the Omer, the waving of the Omer, that it has to come from the land of Israel. That's in the Torah. And the wheat for the first fruits that's got to be offered in the temple, it also has to come from the land of Israel. So Israel is more sanctified than all the other countries in the world. Then it says that a walled city, meaning a walled city in the land of Israel, is more sanctified than another city. Now that is because a metzora, one that has biblical leprosy, has to be expelled out of the city until he is purified. Also, a dead body, it has to be taken out of the city. It says you can take it around inside the city as long as you want, but once you go out of the city, you may not enter back in. Therefore, it's more sanctified than all the other cities of Israel, a city that is walled. Then it talks about Jerusalem. And it says that Jerusalem is more sanctified than all the other cities in the land of Israel, the walled cities included. Then it says that the Har HaBayit, the Holy Temple Mount, is more sanctified than all of the others. Here, now, I don't know if there's a marker here.
And then the point is right there.
I'll just do it this way. You see this area here? That's the royal stoa. Now that you would consider part of the temple, right? It's not. It does not have the sanctity of the temple.
Here's your.
All right.
We'll make it.
Here. You can plug me in. And we're going to rock and roll in a moment. Okay.
Just trying to get paper.
Now, Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount. All right, it'll go fast. All right. There are 10 sanctities in Israel. The land of Israel is more sanctified than any of the other lands. What is its sanctity? That we may bring from it the omer and the first fruits and the two loaves of bread, which we may not bring from any of the other lands. Cities surrounded by a wall are more sanctified than this, for we send the Mezarim out of them. That's the biblical leper. And they may carry a dead body around with them until they decide, once out, they may not bring it back in. Within the walls is more sanctified than this, meaning Jerusalem, for we may eat there Kodeshim Kalim, second degree sacrifices, like the Passover. And Maaser Sheni, second tithe. Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount, is more sanctified than this, for Zavim and Zavot, Nidot and Yodot, may not enter there. I want to explain them all. The Kel, remember the Kel? Okay, the Kel is more sanctified than this. For Gentiles and one rendered impure by a corpse may not enter there. So, Ezrat Nashim. Now, wait a second. Okay. Now, Rico, where's a pointer?
Center, right there.
Okay. All right. What we're looking at, this is the Temple Mount. Right here. Now, when you go on top of the Temple Mount, all of this is up there, but that's not considered by the Bible to be the Temple Mount. Okay? Only a part of it is. That's very important. So, you could be down in this section, and you could be doing all kinds of things, like selling. You can sell in this section. This is where the money changers were. Alright? Only in this area, is that considered the Holy Temple Mount. That's 500 cubits by 500 cubits. Now, you see right here, see that little mark there? That is what we call the Kel. The Kel is going to be a platform that surrounds your inner courtyards. So, if you're standing here, you're outside the Temple Mount, right? But, you're in a more sanctified position than if you were in Jericho. Because even though you're outside the Temple Mount, it is, you're at a higher level. Alright? But, let's say that you go here. You're at the hell. Your friend is over here. So you are more sanctified than him, but he was sanctified here. Are you understanding? Alright. We're going to go forward. I want to show you several things, but it's going to get, hopefully, where I can pull it together for you. Okay, so the court of the women is more sanctified than the hell. The court of the priest is more sanctified than the court of the women. The court of Israel is more sanctified than the court of the women. The court of the priest is more sanctified than the court of Israel. Between the porch and the altar is more sanctified than this. Then it goes into the Hekal. The Hekal is the temple building where the seven branch menorah, the table of the bread of the face, and the golden altar is set. It's more sanctified than the porch and the altar. And then the most holy is the Holy of Holies. Okay, now, I want you to go to Ezekiel 44. And we're going to read about the priest. Let me go back. Let's look at this picture. This is the kel right here. Now the kel is a platform. And you see this building here? Let's go up. And here, this is your inner courtyard. Basically, when you're in this courtyard, it's the concept that you've reached the Garden of Eden. Okay? Now, this building, there's a building here, and a building here, and a building here, and a building here. That is like this building right here. Okay? And you see on one side of the building is the kel. On the other side of the building, okay, here's the kel right here. The building you were looking at in that picture is this one. So on this side is holy, on that side is profane, common. Alright? So, now, keep that in mind. In Ezekiel, we have verse 18, linen turbans shall be on their heads. Wait, let's go to verse 17. Ezekiel 44:17, and if you have a Bible, I need you to read it with me. Ezekiel, yeah, we can turn on the lights. It shall be that when they come to the gates of the inner courtyard, they shall wear linen clothes. Wool shall not be upon them when they serve. When they serve inside the gates of the inner courtyard within, linen turbans shall be on their heads, and linen breeches shall be on their loins. They shall not gird themselves where one perspires when they go out to the outer part of the courtyard. When they go to the outer part of the courtyard, in other words, if they were to go out here, or out here, or out here, or even here. This is the court of the women. The court of the women is an inner courtyard, but they've been in this highest courtyard, the Zora. If they go into the court of the women, they go into an outer courtyard, and this is what they have to do. They shall remove the clothes in which they ministered and leave them in the holy chambers. They shall don other garments. They shall not mingle with the people while wearing their clothes. Now, everybody in this room, I imagine, is going, I don't understand. But let me ask you, how many movies have you seen where you've seen priests walking around in northern Israel in the priestly garments? Or you've seen them out in the Judean desert challenging John the Baptist? Or you've seen them in Jerusalem, and you see them in the marketplace, and they have these priestly garments on. Never happened. Never happened. Or you see Yeshua turning over the money changers' temple, or the money changers' tables, and there's priests that are running in their garments up to him to stop him. Didn't happen. Because they can't wear those garments outside of the Zora. They have to be, the garments have to stay in this courtyard. Now they can go into these buildings right here because those buildings have the sanctity of the inner courtyard. But they can't go out. This is a major concept. God is teaching us about the levels of sanctification. So, we're going to talk about this building. This is one of the corner buildings. Giant building. This is on the northwestern corner. See the temple here? This is called the Beit HaMoked. Beit means house, Moked means heart. It had a fireplace in it because this was the dormitory for the priests, and Jerusalem's on a mountaintop, it gets cold. So here, we're going to see in the Beit HaMoked, it says, this is how the morning services are conducted. The temple official, who's called the Hamanune, he goes to one of the priests that's selected for the service in the morning, and he says to them, go and bring a lamb from the Chamber of the Lamps. And the Chamber of the Lamps was in the northwest corner building, that's your Beit HaMoked. And four chambers were there. One was the Chamber of the Lamps. So let's go back up here. So that would be the Chamber of the Lamps is going to be right over here. Wait, right over here. It's in this corner. And so one was the Chamber of Tokens, and that is in this corner. Right here. And one was the Chamber of Beit HaMoked. That's in this corner. And what was in the chamber where they would make the Lechem HaPanim, the bread of the face? And that is in this corner. So, that was from the Tractate Tamid, in the Mishnah. Now we're going to look at another Mishnah from Midot. It says there were four chambers in Beit HaMoked, like side rooms opening to a drawing room, two in the sanctified area, and two in the unsanctified area, to separate between the holy and the unholy. So, the ends of beams separated the sanctified areas from the unsanctified areas. What was their function? The southwestern one was the chamber of the sacrificial lambs. I already showed you where that was. The southeastern was the chamber of the makers of the Lechem HaPanim. Already showed you that one. The northeastern one, the northeastern one is the chamber of the tokens. But, we're told something, in it, the Hasmoneans stored the stones of the altar, which the kings of Greece had contaminated. The northwestern one, though, through it, they would descend to the place of immersion. So I have a question. Why did they store the stones of the altar? Do what?
They didn't know what to do with them.
Why? What happened to them? Why can't they use them?
They were defiled.
They were defiled by Antiochus Epiphanes, who had a pig sacrificed on the altar. So they couldn't throw them away. Why do you have the Dead Sea Scrolls? Because it has the four-letter name of God in it. What scroll, what book of the Bible, the Tanakh, was not found at the Dead Sea Scrolls? Esther. Why? It doesn't have the Tetragrammaton. But because of the sanctification of the name, you can't throw it away. It has to have a proper burial. Same thing with the stones of the altar. You could not throw those stones away, and because of their sanctification, you had to store them in the inner courtyard. Are you understanding what I'm saying? In other words, you couldn't say, okay, we got all these stones, we can't throw them away, let's put them in a storehouse in inner Jerusalem. Can't happen because of their sanctification. They have to stay there. Just like the priest, when he puts on the garment, then he has to take that garment off if he's going to take one step out of the inner courtyard. Even if he's going to a place that is more holy than almost anywhere in the world. Because he's come up to a level. He's entered a part of God again, and everything in that part has to remain there. It can't come out to you. You can only go to it. So, we go to the Ark of the Covenant. So, let's see. This recording. Okay. It's in my pocket. All right. There are three theories of where the ark is. Three primary theories. One is that it's in Ethiopia. How many have heard that one? Most of the people in the room. It's not in Ethiopia. First off, this is from the book of Isaiah chapter 18. And it says that the land of Cush. But let me ask you something. How many lands of Cush are there in the Bible? Two. One is Ethiopia. All right? But the other is Babylon. You might remember in Bereshit, Genesis chapter 10. And Ham begot Cush. And Cush, that the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. And Nimrod. And so forth. And it says, in the land of Shinar. In Isaiah chapter 18, it says, whose land the rivers divide. Whose land the rivers divide. It is definitely talking about the land of Babylon. All of your biblical commentators, all the rabbis, Ibn Ezra, Arbavanel, they all identified it as Babylon, not Ethiopia in Africa. Okay? Number two is Mount Nebo. This is from the book of Maccabees. So who wrote the book of Maccabees? Who? It's written by the Maccabees. And the Maccabees, the Hasmoneans, what were they? Priests. Okay? And priests, for instance, know that you cannot take the ark out of its location because of its sanctification. However, they are duty bound to protect it. I guarantee you, the rabbis believe that the holy ark is below the Temple Mount. And I agree with them. But if they knew exactly where it was, they would lie to you. To protect it. And I believe that that's exactly what they did in the book of Maccabees. They said, oh, Jeremiah took it to Mount Nebo. But Jeremiah was a priest. And Jeremiah would not presume to do it. So, in the Mishnah, we're told there are 13 chests, 13 tables, 13 prostrations in the temple, the house of Rabbi and Gamaliel, and the house of Rabbi Hananiah, the Sagan and the Kohanim would prostrate themselves 14. And where was the extra one? Opposite the wood store. In Hebrew, it's Dir Eitz or Dir Heitz. For they had a tradition in their hands from their ancestors that that was where the ark was hidden. It once happened that a certain Kohen was occupied, and he saw that the floor was different from the others. He went and told his friend, but he had no time to end the matter until his soul departed, and thus they knew with certainty that the ark was hidden there. So, we have three places that are called the Chamber of the Wood. One is called the Lishkat Ha'etz. Literally means Chamber of the Wood. One is called the Lishkat Hayitzim, which means chamber of the woods. Then we have one that's called the Deer Ha'etzim, which means storehouse of the wood. And I put another word up there, it's called Sha'ar Hadelek, which means the wood gate or the kindling gate. So, right here, this is called the Lishkat Ha'etzim. And in this chamber, this is the court of the women, in this chamber, disqualified priests that have blemishes, or maybe they have one leg is shorter than the other leg or whatever, but they're not allowed to minister inside the Azara. They fulfill their duty by inspecting the wood right here to make sure that the wood's kosher. So we have another one, and the second one is called the Lishkat Heights. And it is in this building right here. And it is the chamber of the high priest. So we can disqualify this one because the holy ark is more sanctified than the holy altar. And the holy altar had to be stored right here. In other words, the holy ark has to be in the perimeter, not only of the Temple Mount, but it has to be where the sanctification is. So, we have this building right here on the southwestern corner. Very interesting building. This building is called, in Hebrew, the Beit Otzrot, the House of the Treasury. It had a name in the first temple period. It was called the Beit Yair HaLebanon, the House of the Forest of Lebanon. Remember that one? Big building. 100 cubits by 50 cubits. Gigantic. It was where the armory was. It was where the treasury was. The wood, there is, the wood is stored in this building for the altar. Now remember, they inspect it down here, but they have to bring it into the temple, and it's going to be brought in right here. That is a gate called the Shor Hadelik, the kindling gate, the firewood gate. So we believe that below this building right here, below the Beit HaOtzrot, or the Beit Otzrot, the treasury building, the storehouse building, that they had a chamber in the building where they stored the wood so that they could move it quickly from there to the altar as it was needed. That below that chamber, below this building, that below this building, that there is a massive room, a massive chamber. And that massive chamber is where they stored the Holy Ark. How many of you have been to Jerusalem? Did you go down the Western Wall Tunnel?
Yep. Yeah.
What was the most impressive thing that you saw in the Western Wall Tunnel?
Big stones.
Big stones. How big are stones? Are you sure? That look like them? You know how much this stone here weighs? 600 tons. You know what the biggest stone in the pyramid is? The Giza pyramid? 5 tons. 600 tons. You know how high on the wall this is? 60 feet. From the bottom. The bottom of this stone is 60 feet above the street. The stone next to it weighs 400 tons. You know what a 600 ton stone is equivalent to? It is equivalent to a 747 jet coming back from Israel. The jets coming back are heavier than jets going. Because everybody brings rocks home. Now, why did they put these stones this big there at that tunnel? Do you know what that stone lines up with? Guess what? It lines up perfect line with the Beto throat. They did sounding chambers and they found on the other side of this stone is a huge hollow chamber. Now listen, people. I am fascinated with the Ark of the Covenant, but I'm not looking for it. What I want is the message from it. See, I believe that God has something He needs to communicate to us. He wants to communicate to us. And we have this problem, and I've been real disorganized today. I apologize for that, but here's a major message. We are so concerned with trying to find out who we are. Trying to learn the beginning aspects of Shabbat, how to keep the festival of Sukkot, and all of these, but we're not getting down to some of the more important things that God wants us to learn. This is a major area. Now, I don't have big conclusions I want to give you. What I want you to realize is, wow, I never even thought about all these messages of communicating between the holy and the common. See, that's more part of what Sukkot's about. That's part of what everything, all your commandments are going to be about, separating between holy and common. So God structured everything in the people's life to teach them about this, because you're going to have to divide. You're going to have to divide. You're going to have to come to something and say, huh, which way do I go? Let's take it down to the most simple messages. I'm not going to get into talking kosher foods, but let's just talk clean foods. Clean foods, you go to the grocery store and you're new to this. And so you have to decide, am I going to buy pork anymore? Am I going to buy bacon? And you start the process of separating and dividing. To separate to the Kodesh and separate to the profane. And that will be a continuing process. Now, I got one last thing. I don't know how long I've gone, but I'm sure that I'm about out of time here. But I have one more little major part to this. You remember that it said that there were 10 sanctities in the land of Israel? Let me get about 3 or 4 of you to come up here with me. Listen, it says that Abraham rose early. So you run to do the... Okay, now you're going to get a bad job. We're going to set you over here. She is representing... anywhere in the world. Okay? Anywhere in the world, you are going to be Israel. So step here. So, who is more sanctified? She's more sanctified, right? Okay. Now, but you are going to be in Jericho. Jericho is a walled city at the time of the conquest. So this is more, who's more sanctified? Okay? So you, we're going to move you down a little bit. She is going to be Jerusalem. So who's more sanctified?
She.
Okay? You get to be Hor HaBayit, the Temple Mount. Okay? Who's more sanctified? Alright, but, now, what we have is she has just gotten here to the land of Israel, right? And so she has a degree of sanctification. What if she, we're going to take you right over here, and she is now come to Jericho. Okay? You come right here.
Woo-hoo.
She left Missouri.
Woo-hoo.
She went to Israel. Who's more sanctified? She's more sanctified, but wait a second, here I am, I'm over here, and I'm back in Missouri.
You're more sanctified than me.
That's right. Now, realize everything is relevant to where you are. Everything is relevant to where you are. This is very important. How many of you have been a believer? You became a believer this year. Anybody in the room? How about in the last 5 years? Okay, we have several people. Okay, that became believers in the last 5 years. So their level of sanctification can be totally right here. They haven't yet moved in their understanding, in their practice, in their observance to this level. Okay? But here, I'm way over here. I'm at the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the Holy of Holies. Okay? So, now the hard question is, all of our people that became believers in the first 5 years, who's more sanctified? Me or them? No. It's the same. Because, see, these are hard concepts, but this is important. It's the same because at their level, they are Kodesh. You can't get any higher than Kodesh. You are in God and dim when you are Kodesh. When you hold the cup on Friday evening and you say the Kiddush, you are in God and dim. When you wave the lulav, you are separated. It is Kodesh. You are not profane. You have reached God and dim. It is relevant to where you are in your walk. But the idea is that it will also be presented before you that I want to move closer. Yeah. I want to move closer because I will expand my understanding. I will come to where that I am. Am I? All right. This is why it's so important. But this is the stuff that nobody's teaching in the non-Jewish Torah world. This is the stuff that we have to have. We have to change our focus and get off of who we are and start moving into the concepts that God has given for us to learn. Amen. We need to start looking at the holy and the profane, the clean and the unclean. We need to go and look in the temple because that's the university. That's where He said, come here and I will teach you myself. Okay? One thing you have to do is you can't go in with anything you already know. You can't go in with anything you already know because almost everything that we were taught in Christianity about the temple, everything we were seeing in the movies, on the television, in fact, a lot of the Jewish books have been affected and tainted by that. You have to go in as a baby. So don't go in with preconceived ideas, but let God be the potter. And let Him mold you and shape you and teach you these concepts. Yes?
Can by positioning, she surpass us and move on to
yes.
Positioning?
Yes. Our question is, can a person go forward? Do you have to go in this progression? Do you have to go from one step to the next step before you can go to the next? But the answer is that yes, you can go way forward. But everything deals with concepts. All right? Remember that in the temple. It is not righteousness attained by doing something. It is God communicating concepts to you that will mold and shape your life. Okay. How much time do I have, if any? Huh?
We'll give you forever.
Yes. No. Y'all can turn on the lights, and let me see if there's any other pictures in here. All right, I'm going to open it up for questions then. Y'all can turn up the lights? Yes.
You shared a story which I don't really understand, and I know if I talk to my boys about it, they'll say, well, the man who was occupied, was he going to the bathroom or something? What does that mean? And he saw a difference in the floor, and what does that mean? And he was going to tell somebody, about it and before he died, but how would we know?
All right. Her question is, let me take it back to the Mishnah. Her question deals with Shekelim 6, 1 and 2. Out of the Mishnah. How many of you have read the Mishnah? All right. All of you need to read the Mishnah. Okay? Because, how many commandments do you have in the Torah? 613. How many are explained? How many are explained? Tell me, give me a number. Zero. Not one commandment is explained. So, who wrote the Mishnah? What is this, just a bunch of rabbis? I mean, who is this? This is the decisions of the Sanhedrin on how you keep those 613 commandments. So, it gives you vital information. Vital information. So, here, she asked a very interesting question. And let me see here.
How much of that information is trustworthy?
Okay. I have been working in this for 25 years. I haven't found anything that I don't trust. Okay? It's a lot. When I first read it, I thought, I don't know if I agree with that. But I found out I was like my 2-year-old and 3-year-old son. Whenever I got more information, it made sense. It came together. And so, I'm not saying to blindly accept anything. But what I'm saying is that you've got vital information here that will give you the information that you can start to see and change. Listen, in a normal person's growth, you want to change. If you're not changing, something's wrong. So, back to your question here. Let me see if I can get my Mishnah up here. Ah, here it is. There were 13 chests. Okay. Where was the extra one? Opposite the wood store, the deer hides, for they had a tradition in their hands from their ancestors that that was where the ark was hidden. It's what's happened that a certain cove was occupied. So your first question is, what was he occupied with? Well, she said, was he going to the bathroom? Great question. But, no. He couldn't have been. Why? Can't have bathrooms in the Azara. No bathrooms in the Azara. Why? Because of its sanctification. So, if you remember in the Mishnah where it said there were these four rooms in the Beit HaMoked, and it said one went down and went to the house of immersion. Now, the house of immersion in Hebrew is called Beit HaTevilah, but they went down a stairway, caught a tunnel, and it took them to a bathroom that was not underneath the Azara, not underneath the inner courtyard, and we're told that there was a toilet there. And it actually says that it was a superior toilet because it had a lock on the door. Okay? I think it called it a throne, by the way. I'm not sure. What?
They had to take their garments off before they go to the bathroom?
Yes. Good question. First off, they don't put their garments on until after they've gone and washed, they've gone to the mikvah and they wash, and then they come back up and they have to put the garments on in a certain place, and they have to wash their hands and they have to wash their feet. And so again, remember this ritual all has a purpose, and that purpose is to teach us. Now, what was he occupied with? We don't know. But he had a special, whatever his jobs were, is what it's referring to. And more than likely, he's going to be moving some type of supplies. Could be he's in the warehouse, or it could be anything. It could be flour, it could be wood, it could be anything. And he noticed that. Yes, in the back.
That it will be the altar that they tore down, and how does that relate to, because that was directly referred to as the abomination of altar desolation.
Yes.
How does that refer to in the eyes of Yeshua when he speaks to the apostles, when he told them specifically, when you see the abomination that causes desolation? Now, I'm not speaking against the altar, because I know that us, when the altar is built,
right,
we're very holy, and we are participating. However, a lot of believers who don't understand that will think that it's evil. How does that relate to the end times, you know?
All right. Let me see. First off, what he's referring to is the altar that was desecrated by Antiochus Epiphanes, with the pig being slaughtered on it, that was stored in the Beit HaMoked in its south, in its northeastern corner. Okay. And the first question is, will they use those stones when they build the next temple? I don't think so. I could be wrong, because first off, that won't be my call. That's going to be the call of the Sanhedrin. But until Messiah comes, certainly if they didn't know 2,000 years ago how to do it, and they're going to build the temple before Messiah comes, there will be a temple standing. So they cannot use those stones until they find out, what do we do with them? So in the Hezekiel temple, after Messiah comes, I don't think they'll use those stones either. However, they won't get rid of them. And they will be cleansed, they will be taken care of there. They have built an altar now. Rabbi Richmond, who's a good friend of mine, it was in charge of the project. It is a small altar, but it does meet the minimum requirements, and they built it specifically with the idea that it could be taken down and moved. So, you brought up something very interesting right now. And the altar that they have built, is it sanctified? No. The garments of the high priest that they have built, I have had all of the garments in my hands. I've held the Hoshen HaMishpat, the breastplate of judgment that has the stones, it's set in gold. I've had the seats, which is all of these in my own hands. I've held lots of the vessels for the next temple. I've dressed mannequins with the rabbis and so forth. Why would they let me, I'm not Jewish, why would they let me do that? Because they're not sanctified. But once they're sanctified, not even Rabbi Richmond will be able to touch him, because he's not a Kohen. And they will only be able to be touched in certain locations. Now, the abomination of desolation, that was an abomination of desolation before, in the time of Antiochus, but that is a picture of an abomination that's coming. So, you know, that's still future. Do you want my real fast 2-second answer? I think it's a crucifix. The question is, what do I think the abomination of desolations is? There's a difference between a cross and a crucifix. Crucifix has an image of a man on it. Okay? But, okay, yes. We don't know. Yeah, we don't even know that they're there. We don't know that they're there. There is quite a bit of stuff that is still underground. Let me mention a couple of points here real fast. How many of you have heard that there's an elevator under where the Holy of Holies and everything? There's no credibility to that. Okay? I guarantee you there's no credibility. I've been over to the PEF, Palestine Exploration Fund, where they did the ground surveys and everything. There is nothing there. There's another one that there is an elevator shaft that takes the Ark of the Covenant out from there. No credibility to that one either. There's a lot of stories out there. Yes, yes.
So, is the picture that you showed us of the 600 tons, is that an actual picture, or is that a drawing of something that was?
No, that's an actual picture.
In other words, those stones were there.
Yes, yes. There's a whole row of them, and they're called the Master Course. And let me tell you where you can get some information on it. You can go to, on the internet, go to Biblical Archaeological Society, the Bohr Archive. And it costs like $50 a year, but you have access to all of their magazines, all of their articles, books. But look up Dan Bahat, B-A-H-A-T. He's the archaeologist that was in charge of the Western Wall Tunnel, and he has the best information on those stones.
Do you have this listed on your website?
Yes, I'm sure we do. Yeah, we'll have it on our website. This is a report I have to do to the rabbis, hopefully in November. But it's on the four corner buildings. This will be for the rabbis of the Temple Institute of the Sanhedrin. And if you want to glance at it, I've got to expand it. We found some new information just lately. Yes, sir.
How certain are you that the Ark of the Covenant is in Jerusalem?
We're very certain. It has to be underneath there. The question is, how certain are we that the Ark of the Covenant is there underneath the Temple Mount in Jerusalem? There is a rabbi, Debbie, the chief rabbi of the Kotel that died. Getz, Rabbi Getz. Rabbi Getz. Several years ago, the Western Wall Tunnel was constructed as a big secret. Because the Muslims, any archaeological work around it leads to intifadas, rioting, all types. So they kept it a secret. They dug this tunnel that went down the Western Wall. And Dan Bahat was in charge of this. Dan Bahat is a tremendous archaeologist. And they found the Warren's Gate, named after Captain Charles Warren from the Palestine Exploration Fund. But this was the gate that led up behind the temple building. And it was open. And they went in the tunnel, and they were able to go quite a distance. And there were a number of rabbis that went, Rabbi Getz, who was the chief army rabbi?
Time's up.
Time's up?
Yes, sir.
Okay. At any rate, they went in, but they believe that they found that actual chamber that was there. So, I'm going to stop here, and good to be here. Shalom.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Joe.